Blog Talk Radio.
Alcohol abuse, shameful waste of precious booze.
What a glass is the chicken wire in front of my face, Jack Daniels. Falling like a rain on the face. Then a fight broke down and a bouncer broke a bottle. Over all that noise, I heard somebody holler, alcohol abuse, shameful waste of precious booze. Name your pain, whatever you choose. Oh, highball, Bloody Mary, fuzzy navel, cooking sherry, mudslide, margarita, whiskey, straight tequila, screwdriver, hurricane, Shirley Temple down the drain. Every drop we lose is alcohol abuse. Well, the trouble escalated as the cops showed up. They busted through the doors, pulled out their handcuffs. They said, boys, you need some help, a little rehabilitation. We're running you in for misappropriation. Alcohol abuse, shameful way. Harpoon, Lone Star, Blue Moon, Dose, Sticky, Amstel, Samuel Adams, gone to hell. Every drop we lose is alcohol abuse. Hey, yeah, yeah. Watch out. Cooking sherry, mudslide, margarita, whiskey sour, straight tequila, screwdriver, hurricane, Shirley Temple down the drain. Every drop we lose is alcohol abuse. Right. Michelob Band, Heiser Miller Lite, Budweiser, Newcastle, Harpoon, Lone Star, Blue Moon, Dos Equis, Amstel, Samuel Adams, Gone to Hell, Highball, Bloody Mary, Fuzzy Navel, Cooking Sherry, Mudslide, Margarita, Whiskey Sour, Straight Tequila, Screwdriver, Hurricane, Shirley Temple, down the drain. With every drop we lose, it's alcohol abuse. Every drop we lose, it's alcohol abuse.
I'd like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our June 14th show. My special guest is Marshall Dane. Marshall, welcome to the show.
Right on, brother. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, it's great to have you on. I appreciate it. I got a lot. We got a lot to cover, a lot to talk about. you've got your latest release is out, One of These Days. Is that correct?
Yep, that's the latest album. Yep, correct.
And we just heard Alcohol Abuse. And that's a single that's released off the album?
Yes, correct. And that's our second single.
Your second single. Now, I want to talk about your songwriting in a minute, but with this latest release, talk about how, you know, what went into that, Marshall. I know that singer-songwriters have a lot of songs and a lot of material, and you can use other people's material. And when you're getting into the planning stages of an album, it's not an easy thing. But how did it work for you for this one? I know this is your second or third album, I believe. And when you started working on that, what did you have a theme? Did you say, okay, these are the songs I'm going to use? How easy was that? Were there songs that you didn't use? And if you could walk the listening audience through that, how that process works.
Sure. Basically, it was the summer of 2011, and I had just I guess I was in the second year, going into the second year of my previous record, my first full-length album, Running Stop Signs. And so what happened was I was just at that year-and-a-half mark thinking, well, you know, if I'm going to do an album in 3 years, I'd have to start writing for it now because that only gives me, you know, maybe say 6 months to a year to write and another 6 months to record and or vice versa. And then, you know, I was just kind of thinking broad picture kind of stuff without really too much definition to what how I was going to get there because at the time I was, you know, completely broken. I'm still completely broken. It's the music business. But I better at least plan for it by writing songs. So I had made a trip down to Nashville. Specifically, I was on this little run during a month where I was performing in Eastern Canada for 4 days, and then I flew straight to Nashville for, I think, it was a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then I flew to the Northern Canadian Arctic for 3 weeks performing out there. So I was in this kind of whirlwind, and as I went down to write, I was going through some pretty severe emotions. By severe, I mean, I guess more extreme, not severe. I had just come out of my first tour that I'd ever been on, like a real tour where I was on a bus with the band going to place, the stuff you think about as a young musician thinking, oh, wouldn't that be cool? So I was doing that, and all these great things were happening, and then all of a sudden I had this, you know, my relationship that I was in for quite a bunch of years all of a sudden just fell right from underneath my feet and flatlined me and made me just kind of wake up and stop and smell the roses kind of thing. And that's what I all of a sudden started feeling the very first writing session I went into. And I wrote a song called One of These Days. And the song is all about, you know, kind of just not saying I'm going to do something next week or in a week or 2 weeks from now or putting it off, but not putting stuff off any longer and taking advantage of today and taking the most advantage of it you can possible so you're not taking it for granted because life goes by fast. And I didn't see that as being the MO or the message that was going to be behind the whole album at the time. I just started writing. As it turns out, that was 2011, 2012. I meet somebody else that I'm, you know, completely mad about, and she passes away. And I'm like, this is just the most, you know, extreme emotions that I was going through writing this record and putting this record together. So unlike, I guess, some, you know, like when you're thinking of maybe writing a movie or something like that, you come up with a theme, you come up with an idea, and then you write the whole script. I haven't yet done that. I've just found myself writing in the moment and then looking at the collection and saying, wow, what a piece of my diary, basically, you know, of what's happened in my life. And, you know, and if I don't tell you the stories behind the songs, you might not even get that, you know, what I'm actually talking about. It comes across maybe somewhat differently. But, you know, in actual fact, some of these songs have little hidden meanings and different stories. I guess, like I would hope they would do for everybody, they would find their own meaning in it. And I guess that's, you know, to answer your question, you know, how much pre-thought maybe be into it or not, your question, but your comment. You know, I was kind of writing at will. Now, said that, I've done that a couple times now, the last two records. And now, all of a sudden, going into thinking about a third album, I'm now doing what you were talking about, which is, you know, I got this kind of idea for a record I want to make, and it's going to be called this, and I want this to be the title of it, and I want to write songs that are kind of in this vein. Like, I don't even know what this, you know, it's just an idea. You know, it's just kind of a creative whim. So, you know, I'm sure and I'm hoping that throughout the process of my career, I'll be able to experience the different facets of what, you know, makes an album, an artist album, you know, great or, you know, small, whatever, you know, however you approach it. I'm sure there's just like having different producers. There's a different way to skin the cat, so many different ways. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, that there's a couple of things there that, you know, very interesting with like you were talking about the producers and the musicians that you have, you know, on the albums and with you and in the band and sharing, you know, your music because it, at the end of the day, it's your music, your name's on it, and although you know the collaboration is a great thing, but also, you know, a lot of people will go on and marshal to other projects, but that's always going to be your music. Was it in the last album? Who produced the album? Was that an easy choice, and did how did that work out? Because that's always something that I'm interested in, and when people are, you know, getting a record together, and it's a big deal, and you know, to get somebody that you connect with, that you think, okay, I trust them to do this. Was that a big step for you? Was it an easy step for one of these days?
I'd say it was probably a lifelong step to get to that. And the reason I say it like that is because I've just recently experienced it again when it comes to video production. You really have to put your faith. If you have a vision for what your video should look like, you have to have faith that, you know, they can do what you need them to do and express it the way you need them to express it. Because if they can't capture it on film and then cut it the right way, you can be, you know, you could be very disappointed in what you're getting. Fortunately, I haven't had to do as many videos as I have had to do recordings to figure that out. And I shouldn't even say to figure that out, but I mean, as a young artist, just, you know, as a kid, I would just record myself, you know, on little Porta Studio kind of things, little four tracks at home, you know, little digital things. But, you know, then you get someone else that you hear, they do some recordings, and you record at their place, then you record at somebody else's place, then you record at your best friend's place, and you see what free sounds like, you know. And then you go and you decide one day, you know what, I've done free, I've done $200, I've done $1,000, what would $2,000 get me, you know? And then you talk to somebody, and I made this little record one time, and it cost about $3,000 by the time I was done, but I had five or six songs on it, and it was, you know, or seven tunes, and it was great. You know, it didn't sound consistent, but it was pretty good. But it never sounded like the radio. It was never something that I thought, this production I could take right now and put next to whoever was popular at the time, you know.
Yep.
Anybody, I mean, like a John Mayer, you know, any kind of artist out there, would it sit on those shelves next to that quality, and you'd be able to say, yeah, man, you know, mine stands up. And mine didn't. So, and neither did my friends, though. And I knew that, and I also knew that my friends either produced it themselves and did all the instruments themselves, and they were kind of good at most of them, but weren't really great at it. And then all of a sudden, one day, I was fortunate enough, after playing, you know, the same club over and over again, I had the guy that wrote that song, What About Love? Didn't Need Someone to Care for You. That tune there, he walked into the room when I was playing. And he started coming out every week and then finally introduced himself. And he also was a producer. And I heard his recording. He offered me, he says, listen, I'll do four songs for you on spec. You don't have to pay me. Let me just produce a couple of tunes for you and see how it sounds.
That's
and
awesome.
Instantly he gave me that sound that was, you know, I could have faith and sink my teeth into and say, wow, man, you can produce like the guys in the store and like the guys on the TV. And that's now worth, you know, me putting 13 songs into.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I, you know, I think it's so awesome sometimes how that happens. You know, someone will come in and he probably thought, wow, we can do something together, you know, and there's that connection.
He was willing to put his time and, you know, which is money,
yeah,
and his skills on the line, saying where his mouth is,
and,
you know, which was a real true testament to his kind of faith or belief in the project, which gave me faith in him.
Yeah, and that's pretty rare, Marshall, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
Completely awesome. I mean, I've heard of things like that happening before, but most of the time, you know, that doesn't happen. It can be, okay, I think you're great, come to my office on Monday and we'll work out, you know, talk to my accountant and we'll work things out. But that's just really, really amazing. And do you think that you, through collaborating with him and with the musicians, and you said that it was getting that quality that you wanted, but it was still the music you wanted. I mean, that was still your music, but it was the quality you wanted. Do you think that could have happened with other producers, or do you think that it was just that magic connection?
Well, I'd have to believe that it can happen to other people as well, because it has happened to other people, and I'm a firm believer in if you work hard enough, you know, and always put yourself in the position to be lucky kind of thing, you know, then your odds are better. Doesn't mean, you know, sometimes the good guys don't win, you know, kind of thing. That's just the way it is. Not everybody wins the lottery. But you get your little – somebody opens a door for you and gives you an opportunity and a chance. You have to really take it, you know, for all it's worth and run with it. you know, and take advantage of it. And so, I mean, it, at the same time, it may, if it didn't happen to me, I don't know where I'd be. I'd be somewhere else still trying to do what I'm still doing now. I'd probably just be a hardworking musician, you know, which is, hasn't changed.
Yeah, and, you know, what you were I want to talk about your songwriting style and how that works, Marshall, because it's very interesting to me. And you were talking about the hard times that you went through, and I think that, you know, the gift that people have that that are able to write songs, I think it's so amazing because you did mention the word diary, I think, and it's you can look back at your life and the songs that you wrote and the things that you went through and how I believe that music is something that can heal, and it can make you kind of face things that you wouldn't. And I interviewed this one band, and this guy, and this song I really liked in the band, they were the Doughboys from New Jersey, and I said, I'm going to play this song. And I had the whole band on, and the drummer said, oh, no, don't play that. And I said, why? And he goes, oh, I wrote that song during a really bad divorce. And he said, it got me through the divorce, and I couldn't have made it without it. But he said, it brings back all of that. And have you experienced that, Marshall, when you write the song like you were talking about it, you know, like in the moment, and these are the feelings that you have. So you're writing it, and is it work sometimes as therapy for you that you can get through some of the things with your music? And then the second part of that question would be, how does it feel when you hear those songs again?
Okay, well, I guess if I get this in the right order here, you ever see those musicians that look a lot younger than their age, and it's because, you know, then there's the other side of the coin where the musicians look a heck of a lot older. But there is something very therapeutic about music. I mean, that is scientifically proven, medically proven, but it's also, I mean, if you just look at how it affects yourself, when you hear a song, you start tapping, your adrenaline starts going, you got endorphins going on. I get to go out 3, 4, sometimes 5 times a week and get it off my chest. All that that can build up. You don't even feel the you just work in your regular, you know, daily life, and that, you know, but it weighs on you. When you don't have, that's why people love to exercise, or that's what's great about exercise. It just gets all that stuff out of your system. So with music, when you write stuff out, it's kind of, you know, any therapist would say that it's healthy to kind of write out your feelings, you know, put that on paper. It's like you're saying it out loud. Now imagine you write it, you say it out loud a few times, then you put it to a song, then you put it to a song that you really like, and then you always get a chance to perform that song. And as long as you're not, you know, so wallowing in the pain of it, or in the, you know, I guess if that's the type of song you're thinking about, then it's going to bring you strength. Even if it digs in and gives you some heavy emotions, I've cried, you know, in the middle of a song. I'm not saying I broke down and sobbed, but I mean, there's times when I'm just like, I'm catching my own, you know, trying to get a word out. I'm like, whoa, I'm emotionally overcome at the moment. It's amazing. It's great. You know, and there's 3,000 people out there, and they have no idea that this is how intense I'm about to deliver this.
Yep.
Because this is what I'm feeling. So, yeah, you know, it does affect you. It does affect your performance, but that's the good thing. You use that as the energy and the passion, the fire that you can, then you push it out to the audience, and then the audience says, oh, I felt something like this too, and he just made me feel like I'm not alone, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's a great benefit.
Yeah, that's when I ask the question to most, for the large majority of musicians, Marshall, about why they do it. Why do you pursue music? What is it about it that you keep doing it? What motivates in them? And most of the time they say it's the response that they get from their music.
Well, yeah, that's why people love to play. I mean, it's the response to something that feels so good to do anyways.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, if people could just love you for sleeping, I bet you people would sleep all the time. You know, like, wow, you sleep great. You know, but because otherwise, I mean, I can't think of anything else, you know, more enjoyable on the planet, you know, other than sitting there playing music and everybody else gets to enjoy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great blessing sharing thing. You know, it's cool.
Yeah, it is. And plus the fact that something that, you know, not everybody gets to do something that they really enjoy, plus the fact that your music is really awesome. So I've talked to people, Marshall, that have this great, incredible drive to be musicians. They're not that, but it's, but they can, it can, you know, I don't know if it's mean, but they have the honesty and they have the drive, and I support them. But it's also really kind of cool when somebody has the talent, you know, and they do that because it's, I don't know if that makes any sense, but I'm
catching you.
Yeah. It's always good when that's behind you. But let's talk a little bit about your journey in music, Marshall, how you started off. I mean, how did it all come? Marshall's going to be a musician. You're going to take this road. I mean, did you grow up in a musical family? What were some of your influences?
That's basically like birth to 18. Birth to 16, maybe 17. And basically, it's, yes, I come from a musical family. I don't remember a time in my life when music wasn't just a part of a daily routine, whether it be my mother sitting at the piano for her own enjoyment and playing for 5 minutes if she had it, or waiting until the end of the night and us going to bed, me and my three older sisters, my younger sister, and my two younger brothers. And my mom would sit there and play the piano all through the years as we were kids every night. My father would go everywhere with a guitar. We'd go camping, he'd bring a guitar. We'd go to visit friends, he'd bring a guitar. We'd go to an old folks' home to visit, you know, somebody from the church. My dad would bring a guitar and play songs for some of the folks. And, you know, he knew some cute little, I guess, Canadian folk songs. So that's always kind of been in the family. I started picking up the piano somewhere around the age 5. I just started kind of tinkering on it, really enjoying sitting down at it. You know, my mom taught me hot cross buns and a couple little things, but I was really, I was intrigued by just sitting there and playing stuff, finding ways to make notes sound nice. At 12, I asked about playing the guitar, and I wasn't, you know, musically, I wasn't into the piano so much that they thought, oh, wow, now he wants guitar. This is great. It was more like I tinkered at the piano. I'd like to learn how to play guitar. And, you know, they had Sunday jamborees. Every Sunday, every other Sunday, we'd be at my grandmother's house, and my grandmother would have a lap steel. My grandfather would have a fiddle resting on his knee because, you know, his arthritis in his arm wouldn't allow him to hold his shoulder up anymore, so he just rested on his knee. My uncle was on the piano. My other sister was at the other end of the piano playing the octave higher. My other sister was on another fiddle. Like, it just goes on. My brother-in-law, he's Asian, and he was the harmonica player in our group. I mean, like, everybody found a way to make sure they could participate, except for me. I was juggling a soccer ball. So I asked my dad. I learned how to play guitar. Next thing you know, I'm 15 years old, and I pick up a little gig at a cafe. All my friends could play better than me. I couldn't play fast. I couldn't play guitar licks. I couldn't play the lick from Sweet Child of Mine. You know, I couldn't do all those cool things. I didn't know who Led Zeppelin was. But I could play songs, and I played songs like Kenny Rogers, and I played songs like Simon and Garfunkel that my mom used to listen to, and I'd play songs that I wrote at 15. And then, of course, then I was 16. I got told by the elders in my congregation that pursuing a life of music is not what God wanted me to do. He wanted me to be a preacher, and that's what I was supposed to be. And then finally at about 17 when I left home, I said, okay, I'm a good guy. I'm not a bad son. I just have to pursue something different. I've got another thing I got to get out of my system. And that's when I started finding my way towards full-time music, some gigs, and ba-dum-bum, here we are.
Well, that, you know, there's a lot of things ringing in my head on that. But it's like, you know, first of all, when you're talking about the family playing together, and, you know, to me, that's one of the most coolest things and the best memories that I have, because my mother and my grandmother played piano, and they would play duets. And I would grow up, you know, you'd just come home and they'd be sitting there, Marshall, at the piano playing these, like, ragtime things.
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of like it happened to everyone. You know, everybody's family did that. And then I found out that, you know, as you get along, that that's not the way it is. It's a pretty special thing. And for you to see your family playing like that, and I think also you know, let's look at the part where you decided you're a young person and you wanted to take that step. You know, I want to be a musician. I know that it might not be what, you know, the church or the people want me to do, but I'm going to have to do it. That's the drive that a lot of people, when I've interviewed folks and I interview, like what will also happen, Marshall, I'll go to shows and I love listening to music, live music. I'll listen to anybody, anywhere. It doesn't matter what kind of music. And people will say, oh, they're not that good or whatever. And I've never thought that because it's you get that passion. It might not be exactly what I like, but that person's doing it, you know. They're out there doing it. They're not thinking about doing it. They're out there doing it. Now, do you remember that drive within you, that motivation that said, hey, I'm going to risk it. I know that people are telling me I'm crazy, but I'm going to do it. Do you remember that? I had interviewed this person once, and I can't remember her name. I'll have to look it up after the show, but she was in her doctorate program. She had gone through grad school. She master's or doctorate, and she just was under a lot of pressure, Marshall, and she said, it's a done. I'm over. I'm going on the road. I'm going to play. I'm going to sing. I'm going to be a musician. And I never went back. Never got her degree, never did it, and she said she never regretted a second of it. But that was that moment, you know, that of clarity that she had. I mean, not a lot of people could do that. Now, do you remember that, like, okay, I might not be the most popular, my family might not like my decision, but I got to do it anyway. Do you remember that specific awakening or whatever you would call it?
Yeah, I'm going to say it like this. There's three specific moments. One, when my elder in my congregation took me out because I was firmly convinced, I knew in my heart what I was going to do, no matter what transpired between the conversation between the elder and I. Secondly, when I had finally landed my first, I wanted to be in music so bad that I thought, I'm going to go to there's a big theme park in Ontario, just north of Toronto, that had, you know, it's like a big amusement park, rides and stuff, and they had these outdoor shows we used to go to as kids. And I thought, I'm going to go see if I can get myself an audition there. I got no training, no formal anything. I don't read music, but I can play three instruments or four instruments. I can sing, but I got no training. Let's see if I can get the gig. I got the gig. And during that season, that summer season, I thought, I don't want to do anything else but this. So now I left there and had to go do other jobs because I didn't have anything else right away in order to make my way. But I then landed a job downtown Toronto at the corner of University and College, and I'd never gone to university or college, and I had a two-floor job. I was on two different floors on this like 21-story building as the assistant to the head of engineering for the Ontario Hydroelectric Company. I had benefits, I had a pay like I'd never seen before, and I was only in it for about 3 months, and everybody was loving me. I was good in the office, and my mother was happy, my dad was happy, and I sent in my letter of resignation. And I mean, and I'm saying this because you're telling your story about the other person you interviewed that said that was it, and they never looked back. I made that decision with, you know, over $3,500 a month. Ridiculous. I mean, that was good money. And I gave it up to go on the road with the band. And I had 14 days booked with them. And I asked the booking agent, can you guarantee me at least 14 or 15 shows a month at this amount per show? And then I can, you know, at least justify making my rent. And he said, yeah. And I had no contract. This guy could have left me high and dry. Right. But he had these shows and he wanted me on the show. And so I up and left everything. And my mother's like, you did what? You gave up benefits? I wanted you to be a doctor, or a lawyer, and a preacher. And here you are, a musician who just quit a job that most people without, you know, a higher education would have been praying to try and get into. And anyways, so I gave it up. And it was fine. It was cool because I knew I got it with my mind. I knew I could go back to it with my mind if I ever wanted to get back into finances. That was what got me there. I studied, I took courses, and I got the job. So I thought, my body will only sustain so much rock and roll. I better get the rock and roll out of my system. And here I am a couple years later. I'm like, the rock and roll is still in my system. It's here to stay.
You know, that makes me think of some of the decisions, Marshall, that I've made in my life, where I can remember being a young person and I had a job, and my first wife's father was a foreman at a big place, and he made a lot of money, and everybody, and he said, I want you to quit your job and I'll get you a job working for me. And I just looked at him. I mean, everybody's at the kitchen table, right, Marshall? And I said, no, that's all right, thanks. And they, like, flipped out, because this was a job that everyone wanted, and he was going to get me in, you know, and all that. And I said,
now, why didn't you take the job? That's my question.
I just didn't feel like it.
I thought you were going to say you were going on the road with a band.
Well, here's what I think is it kind of connects to that, is it was my decision. It wasn't his. You know, like,
oh, yeah.
The preacher told you what he thought, your mother and father told you what they thought. That's all really great stuff. They're all looking out for you. There's no doubt about that. But when it comes down to the end of the day, you've got to look at yourself, and you've got to feel like that's the decision that you made. And I think that, you know, that's when I left that. They thought I was insane. And I left that, and of course everybody was saying, well, you know, the same thing. It's like, you know, that would be, you know, you could have a big house and all that. I thought, I don't think I want to be in that position, you know, where it wasn't mine. I wouldn't really have earned it. But I think as a musician, Marshall, it makes a lot of sense to me, because it's like, it's that passion. And that's what, you know, musicians have. You know, I had another interview today with a country musician that has had a lot of different things come against him, but he just, no matter what it is, he just keeps going. I mean, it's just like, and I said, that's why I do this show. That's why I want to know, what is it that motor keeps rolling along? And what is it with you, Marshall? I mean, what can you say? Okay, I'm going to get up tomorrow and I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to do this. This, you know, this is my passion. What do you attribute that motivation to?
I'd say it's the combination of life experience mixed with just who I genetically am. You know, if I was born, you know, on a different, more, you know, different pasture, or on the other, different side of a track, the other side of a river, you know, I'd be a different guy, possibly. Who knows? You know, maybe I'd be in a different pursuit. But with the music, it feels so good that when you get that little taste every time, like, you know, I hate to compare it to the junkie thing, but it's just, you know, you get that little feeling of, oh, we got one step closer. We just got a gig for this much. And we just got, you know, a show with this many people. Or we just got another show with however many people on a gorgeous sunny afternoon. You know, and that drives you to say, you know, until something tells me that I can't do this, why wouldn't I do this? So you get up tomorrow and you try and find out another way to navigate through. Because really what you are at the end of the day is you're a small business, and you're using music as your medium, and you are the product. So you have to either wake up and eat like garbage and feel like crap and, you know, do things that aren't good for you, or you can, you know, wake up and try and, you know, and it doesn't mean you have to work, you know, full throttle all the time, head to the wall, you know, for the sake of the music, and, you know, but you've got to put, you know, you want to get up and you want to do something so that you can ensure that you can do it again next year, you know. And, you know, and or, heck, I talk to my musician friends that are in the same kind of pursuit as me, and then they turn off and become teachers, and I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty good too. Back to that steady paycheck and 3 months off in the summer, you know. You know, there's always got to be the guy that does this, and I just think I'm predisposed to be that guy. You know, it's in my blood. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do it. So, you know, like my mom says, yeah, you either die or you get up tomorrow and you live. So those are your two options. And so you get up the next day and you just work hard at it. you know, struggle like everybody else, try and get out to the water.
Now, what was the, you talked about, you know, doing rock music and influences there. What was it that made you turn to more of the country way? I mean, what was it that, that your music kind of went that direction? What do you like about that, the country music that that is different? And talk up, and I also want to ask you about, you know, being in Canada, and what do you see any difference there with, like, country music there than you do, like, when you do travel to the U.S. or to Nashville and places like that, or is it basically the same?
Got it. Okay, well, I've never been, it's funny, I think people look at my long hair and they think that I'm a rocker, and it's, I mean, whatever, that's cool. But I've never actually played hard rock music. I've played, like, Brian Adams rock, you know, but I've never even, like, played, like, rock and roll, like The Who, and yeah. I didn't even know much Beatles, so I always played these kind of softer, melodic, pleasant-sounding songs. My father was not a hard rocker. He was a Willie Nelson, Vince Gill, Merle Haggard, Conway Twitty kind of fan. My mother was always kind of the soft, pleasant stuff because she was a piano player, so she liked Simon and Garfunkel and those kind of sounds, John Denver, my grandmother, Kenny Rogers. So I grew up with all this great music that would be acceptable at the church and or in the company of folks from the church. So it was always clean stuff. So I remember being 12 years old. We moved into a house, and there was this big mural on the wall that was going to be my bedroom, and it said AC/DC. And I was like, what's that, Ma? And she's like, nothing. That's nothing. We're covering that over. Antichrist, Devil's Child.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, okay. I didn't know who they were, and I never knew who they were. I was the last person on the planet to hear about Zeppelin. I mean, and we're talking like, I just heard about, I just started listening to their stuff about 7 to 8 years ago. It's funny, but then, of course, I've got three older sisters that were into, the 80s rock music, but it was all like pop rock. It was, the hardest stuff was Metallica, which that was still some, that's like Nickelback now. It's not really that hard. It's just kind of.
That's funny. It used to be really, like, I know exactly what you're saying. It used to be.
Yeah,
like,
it's not hard rock, and I would never play it. I wouldn't go to a club and, at 16 with my guitar and play that. I had an acoustic guitar. I played at a little cafe singing, Bridge Over Troubled Waters and some original music and some John Denver songs. So, I had very rootsy origins, and then, making the transition to say that I'm a country artist was really for the sake of the industry. This is leading into your other question that you had about the differences between rock and country as well, and then we'll get into the difference between Canadian and U.S. country and or international country. But I'm just losing my point here. Going into only playing those kind of softer songs, I never really went to clubs and did the hard stuff, so like played the hard music. So when it finally came time for me to make little demos, when I was 17, 18, 19 years old, I'd send them to people, and they'd be like, what kind of music is this? I'm like, I don't know. I just wrote it. It's an acoustic guitar with a piano part behind it. I don't know what you call that. Like, if you take any song, whether it be a rock song, a pop song, a dance song, or a country song, it was written on either the piano or the guitar for the most part. So I'm just assuming you're listening for the song factor, and that's all I ever concerned myself with. So people would try and say, are you this? Are you pop music? Are you rock music? Because it wasn't a fiddle in my music, and or I don't sound like I'm from Nashville, so therefore it didn't sound like country music. It sounded like less electric guitar version of like a Bon Jovi meets Brian Adams. It wasn't that hard at all. It was just exciting, but that was all, anyway, so said that, I thought, finally, in the summer of 2008, I wrote this little 3-4 waltz, ba-boom, boom, 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 a nice little kind of country tune, and I thought, if I'm going to get into this radio world, they need to know what station to put me on, and I have no clue what station you would put my music on. So I went down to L.A., And I went to the LA Music Awards. I had a great table. I was invited there by some executive people. And I walked around in that room with the biggest smile on my face, my long hair going everywhere. And every other guy in the room, dude, every other guy, black hair, black eyeliner, staring at me, giving me this look like I was invading their turf. And I thought, what's with the – it's music, man. It should just be friendly and easy. Now, mind you, lest I remind you, I came from a very small community and a very small church-knit associated, you know, upbringing. So I'm like thinking everybody should be friendly and happy and go lucky, even though I look like I'm a rocker like them. So I left there, and that was the fall of 2007, sorry. And then in 2008, I thought, you know what? Maybe I got to go where guys with an acoustic guitar and that sing go. And of course, you've seen enough movies, they go to Nashville. And I thought, just before I do that, I'm going to go to the Canadian Country Music Awards in Winnipeg. And I flew out there, and this is leading to your, you know, final question, which is, you know, I shouldn't say final question, but when you asked about, you know, how did I know, I walked into that room, that auditorium of people, and within 5 minutes, I was in the Gibson Guitar Lounge sitting down with this beautiful girl in a beautiful baby blue satin dress, who was playing guitar better than I could ever dream of playing guitar. And then there's this original guitar player from the Guess Who. His manager came up and said, would you mind if this guy sits down and plays with you too? And I thought, this is the friendliest environment ever. This is like a family environment. This reminds me of going to my grandma's as a kid.
That's awesome.
And that's the second I knew that, okay, I get it. You got to put me somewhere on a shelf. Put me in country, because this is my kind of people. Now, said that, your final question about is there a difference between Canadian and American, you know, country music? Of course there is. You know, just because, just like, you know, the rock sounds sometimes different, and, you know, it crosses borders, but, you know, you see a guy from Germany, you know, with his big diesel hat on and, you know, his coveralls, and he's writing country songs,
yep.
It's going to sound a little different. The bottom line, I do believe, is your motive and your message, your ethics, your morals. If you're the kind of person that is at least trying to express through your music those kind of things, then you would fit within country music by definition, because it's in, you know, those classic values, you know. I'm so artistically wide, open-minded that, I mean, take a sax player, bring me a fiddle player, this fiddle player rocks. You know, I have no problem. If the fiddle player can't make it, call the sax player. You know, it'll be a fun show regardless. We're going to put on a great show, and, you know, that's really my motive is to put on that. But, you know, the differences between the different sounds, yeah, that's to be expected because of, you know, the variations of what we all listen to when we're growing up. I used to think bands when I was a kid, I thought they were big American bands, and then I grew up to find out they're, like, from that little town, and that was the only song they ever had on radio in my town.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway. But,
yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, do you find when you're putting your music together, Marshall, and you're writing, do you have, like, conscious barriers or boundaries, or does it just happens? And then you start thinking, well, maybe that's not going to fit into this, but that's what I want. That's what I'm writing. Does that make sense? I mean, sometimes people can get outside of the country and then the rock and then the folk, and there's all kinds of different things. When you're writing, do you write consciously into one genre, or is it just like, hey, let's just let it go?
I'm going to say, unfortunately, I have. And I say that unfortunately, but you know what? I'll take that back, because it's not really unfortunately. It's when you're first writing without education, you just write. You know, and some of the most genius ideas come from the most basic of instincts. But when you are then trying to become a pro tennis player and you're not just playing for fun and beating everybody at school, you then have to really work on technique, and you start thinking about technique. And the one thing they'll always teach you about, you know, like game day, is you train, and then on game day, you let it all go. Let your instinct take over.
Yeah.
So it's very similar in songwriting, and if you're not practiced enough at it, then you will find times when you overthink. You get stumbled on something, and you just can't get through it, and you don't know even how to get through it. And as long as you follow, you know, a couple of simple rules, which, one, it's all about a good hang. if you're going to spend 3 hours there and you're not going to write anything and you're not going to come out with anything on the paper, then have a good time. At least have a good time, make some jokes, have some laughs, and say, let's have another good time next time, and hopefully we write something great. That's one. And the other thing is keep your standards high but your expectations low. Don't worry about if you write the hit song today, but always go in with the intention of writing something, you know, great if you can.
Well, Marshall, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate your time. And do you have, like, projects or gigs or anything you'd like to talk about?
Definitely. I'd love to just give a shout-out to your listeners to let them know that any of our my upcoming stuff that's happening in the future, all can be found on my website, marshalldane.com, MarshallDane.com. And that's, you know, we've got our Twitter feeds, our Facebook feeds, go right from there on all the different things, Instagrams, pictograms, not pentagrams, but I don't believe. But, and, you know, as far as the future, we've just got a lineup of summer shows. I'm right now in the process of looking at what our fall is going to entail as far as single releases, you know, and or what other, you know, what other ideas we may have going into the fall. I know that we're busy with summer tours, you know, until at least end of September. And then I'm hoping by the end of September I'll have figured out what the heck I'm doing in October, November, December.
Well, Marshall, I wish you the best. And
hey, thanks kindly for your time, brother. It's been it's been my pleasure.
It's been great. And my guest is Marshall Dane. And like Marshall said, you can go on his website, marshalldane.com, and check out. And I highly recommend picking up his latest release one of these days. Marshall, you have a great evening, and thank you so much for being on the show. And I just thank everybody for joining tonight. And everybody, anything you'd like to say in closing, Marshall?
I'd just like to thank your listeners for tuning in. I'd like to thank you for your time, and you know, keep enjoying the music out there. That's what I'm doing. I'm just trying to enjoy it and see if I can pass them along to other people too that don't make it themselves.
Well, sounds great. Thank you very much, and
cheers.
We'll talk to everybody next week.
Come on, girl. Girl, we always stay someday. To leave in this town, it's always off in the future. It never seems to come around. I've got a few dollars saved up, and I've got the windows rolled down. I've got a tank full of dreams, and they're telling me there's no better time than now. This is one of these days. Gonna happen, baby, and I don't wanna wait.
anymore. This is one of these days.